Blog Talk Radio.
We are at a critical point, folks. Now we are in a battle to preserve the independence that our forefathers fought for and bled for. This is the time to stand up for America.
This is Liberty Sons, the online radio home for young people with the courage to fight for America. Our show is produced in part by Conservative Nation Radio, only on blogtalkradio.com.
So many of us in our age group get labeled as not interested, perhaps even lazy on the issues, and we can have a voice, and we do have a voice. We want to get rid of that label.
You know, you can't say from here on out that your vote doesn't count, because it obviously does.
Join the fight! Join the fight!
To join our show tonight, please call 718-305-7176. Remember to keep your comments clean and respectful. You can also join us by visiting our blog, libertysons.wordpress.com. There, you can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Conservatism is alive and well.
And now it's time to welcome the hosts. From the campus of Texas Christian University, the Texas Achilles, Mr. J.B. Skeeds. And live from Wofford College in Spartanburg, South Carolina, J. Allen Lawless.
Let us be sure that those who come after will say of us in our time, that in our time we did everything that could be done. We finished the race, we kept them free, we kept the faith.
Good evening and welcome to Liberty Sons on Monday, March 26, 2012. It is 9.02 p.m. on the East Coast. That means it is 8.02 in Texas. Where joining me now is my co-host, Mr. J.B. Skeeds. Good evening, J.B.
Good evening, Alan. How are you doing today?
I am doing very well.
There's a healthcare scare going on. You hear about
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So how are things looking in Texas right now?
They're looking promising. You know, I talking to the students around here and all the Santorum groups, it is looking promising. It's looking good. Obviously, we're looking at Wisconsin right now and talking about the big win we had in Louisiana. And I think they had some carryover and from Louisiana to Texans, and we got a little bit of more of a bump than we've usually been accustomed to after we win. That's what I'm seeing on the ground anyway. But, you know, it looks good in Texas for Rick Santorum. Obviously, we got a little while to go before we reach Texas, but with Pennsylvania, and we talked about earlier, Wisconsin being pretty important. So we're going to have to wait and see. But for now, sunny skies for Rick Santorum in Texas.
That's good. That is very good. It'd be interesting to see, you know, if he can hold on to his lead in Texas. Texas could be the beginning of the next Santorum surge, which would be great heading into June, the June primaries. A win in Texas would really help. I believe the Texas primary is May 29th, perhaps?
Yeah, that'll be May 29th, and 155 delegates. And really, the only person that was threatening here was Newt Gingrich. And, you know, looking at the numbers, and, you know, Santorum or Mitt Romney, it's really an attachment of the Bible Belt in the South. And we saw what happened in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. And when Newt Gingrich really just flailing right now, he's pretty much out of the race. I mean, taking a look at him overall, and I'd say he's done. And those 155 delegates could be heading to Rick Santorum. So really, it's really, you know, we got to buckle up again. It's going to be a roller coaster ride through April, and if we can pull some upsets in April, man, I'm telling you, April, May, I'm telling you, it could definitely turn in favor, like you said, and be another surge for Rick Santorum.
Now, tell me this. I don't know if you know the answer or not, but is Texas, is it a proportional primary or is it winner-take-all?
No, sir. It is a winner-take-all.
Wow. That's a big prize. That is a big prize.
That's right.
So, yeah, that would be a great boost for Rick Santorum's campaign. Texas would be an awesome win there. So definitely keep up the good work there. We'd like to see a win out of Texas if you can manage that for us, JB.
We'll try. Absolutely.
It's all up to you.
It's all on my shoulders. Huh?
It is.
Well,
I think no pressure.
It's looking good then.
The future of the country is in your hands.
Oh, I wish that was true.
but seriously, thank you all for tuning in tonight. We do have a good bit to talk about. Had some exciting news since last week. We've had some not so much exciting news. It's been a roller coaster of a week for Rick Santorum and for his campaign, and it's been a rather slow week for Liberty Sons. We have been pretty bogged down with schoolwork, and it looks like that's going to be the case again this week. So bear with us on the blog. I haven't been as faithful about posting things. JB was the last. Person posted with an amazing article entitled The Power of Prayer. If you haven't read it, I encourage you to go to libertysons.wordpress.com and read that. While you're at the blog, you have about 54 minutes to vote in the best of the blog poll. We'll be discussing the results of that at 10 o'clock this evening. And right now, it looks like Christianity in America and Playing God are the two favorites. Are the two favorite blog posts. So head on over to the blog, vote in our poll, the best of the blog poll. You can find it clearly marked on the menu bar. We'd love to hear from you. And another way we'd love to hear from you is for you to call in at 718-305-7176. Join us online. Join us on air, rather. You're already joining us online. What was that?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Let me make a correction. Our good friend, fellow Texan Michael Smith, actually is correcting me. Texas was a winner-take-all. Unfortunately, now the rules have changed. I'm reading what he's telling me, and now it is unfortunately proportional. So that is proportional. So we're going to need to win, you know, pretty handily to get those all those delegates.
Yes. Texas's primary has been up in the air. I think there was a lot of litigation going on involving that. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. Because historically it has been winner-take-all, I believe. But I think he is right. I do remember seeing an article about Texas's primary being up in limbo and being changed to proportional. So it will still provide a great boost. To win a state like Texas, even without winning all the delegates, but to win a state like Texas is a huge boost to a campaign. So I'm looking forward to seeing Rick Santorum do well there in May. May
Absolutely.
29th, Michael is saying. That is the date of the primary. And before Texas, there are several other primaries, a large number of primaries in April. We have coming up on April 3rd, Wisconsin, Maryland, and D.C. And then on the 24th, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. And then May 8th comes around, and that should be a pretty good day for Rick Santorum with West Virginia, North Carolina, and Indiana. Then May 15th with Nebraska and Oregon. Nebraska should be a good state for Rick Santorum, and he's polling very close in Oregon, actually. And after May 15th, you've got the 22nd, which will be Kentucky, and Arkansas, and I think maybe one other state, maybe not, and then Texas on May 29th, and then you head into the June primaries, which are going to wrap this race up with a Rick Santorum victory, hopefully.
That's right.
We're hanging on to hope. I really do think there are a lot of naysayers out there right now saying that Rick Santorum just needs to go ahead and accept reality and drop out of the race. I read an article today that basically called Rick Santorum the Jerry Brown of the 1992 Democratic primary, when there were so many voices in the party that didn't want Bill Clinton, but he obviously had a huge delegate lead and unstoppable momentum. But Jerry Brown stayed in anyway, just as a spoiler, basically, and really kind of hurt the party and wasted a lot of money. But I think there's something different at work here with what Rick Santorum is doing. I think that Republicans realize that Mitt Romney is not the best candidate to put up against Barack Obama. There have been a lot of people who have been deceived by the media's coverage of this and the media's spin that Mitt Romney is the only candidate that can beat Barack Obama, because in national polls, Mitt Romney does tend to lead Barack Obama by the largest margin. But national polls are like looking at the popular vote after the end of the presidential election. It doesn't matter at all. You need to look at the battleground states, look at the electoral votes, and Rick Santorum is actually the only candidate that I've seen in state-by-state polls of battleground states who has enough support to win the presidency through the Electoral College. You don't win the presidency through a majority of the popular vote, which is basically what a national poll is showing you. So those polls don't even matter. What matters is what goes on in the battleground states like Ohio and Pennsylvania and North Carolina and Virginia and Florida. And right now Rick Santorum is the only candidate that's really leading in those states. So I think that's important to look at and not necessarily listen to this spin that, hey, Mitt Romney's leading Barack Obama by 4 points in the latest national poll. Well, that doesn't matter at all. And it doesn't matter in the least, because national polls don't matter. The popular vote doesn't matter. Whether or not you agree with the way we elect presidents here or not, the facts are that the national vote, the percentage of support you have in the popular vote just doesn't matter. What matters is how you perform in the states, in individual states. And Rick Santorum would automatically win the solid Republican states in the Republican belt in the Midwest and the West and the South. And he would be very competitive in the swing states like Virginia and Pennsylvania and North Carolina and Ohio and Michigan and Florida. States that the Republican nominee has to win in order to become president. Mitt Romney doesn't do so well in those states, mainly because his strategy of total war to win this nomination has alienated a lot of people in these states. So that's one thing to look at when we're looking at who can actually beat Barack Obama, is looking at how a president's actually elected rather than just listening to the media. And then that's my point on that.
Absolutely. Mitt Romney's strategy is proving that it's not going to be a successful one. The presidential election, and the strategy of spending more than your opponent and slamming your opponent to the ground, that might pay off to the establishment base, the Republican Party, but when you look at the independent voters, that's not going to work. And, you look at, like you mentioned, the battleground states and Rick Santorum leading in them. And, that's going to be the key to winning this election. And not only that, but passion. I mean, you don't see the passion. If you saw the passion behind Romney's campaign like you do Santorum's, this thing would have been over a long time ago. But you're not seeing that. And that kind of passion is what's going to take to beat Barack Obama in the presidential election. And so, a lot of us conservatives, which is sad because, the conservatives are the majority and, the moderates are the minority. And we're seeing the minority taking hold of the reins of our party. And it's frustrating. So, we're holding out for Rick Santorum. It's been a bumpy ride, but, still winning. I mean, still winning the state. Took Louisiana. A lot of favorable contests coming up ahead. We're still in this thing. And Rick Santorum has proven that with his strategy, not having the money, but bringing that passion, that he can be the one to beat Barack Obama.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that what's happened is what's transpired has actually happened is because you look at what Mitt Romney's people have done to this primary process. They loaded it up with states that they thought should have been very friendly to them in the beginning, just in case there was a major challenger. Mitt Romney's been running for president. If you count his 2008 presidential bid, because he really hasn't stopped running, he's been running since 2006 or 7. So that's 6 years of running for president. That's a long time. And in that time, he's made a lot of friends with the establishment candidates, because last time, that's where he had the biggest problem, was he wasn't attracting the establishment vote. John McCain did. So Mitt Romney made inroads with the establishment and really got them to move the primaries in his favor. They passed a new primary calendar for him called the Ohio Plan, which was absolutely obliterated by Florida when they decided to move their primary up. But that didn't really help Mitt Romney too much. And now we're seeing that his plan didn't work. By this point, by the South Carolina primary, Mitt Romney was supposed to be the nominee. That was the plan. The plan was by the South Carolina primary, or maybe as late as the Florida or Nevada primaries. Mitt Romney was supposed to be crowned as the nominee, basically. And the party was supposed to unite behind him and on to victory in November. Well, that didn't happen because the party doesn't care for him. The majority of people in the party simply don't think that he's the right person, because nobody knows who they're talking to or who they're looking at or who they're listening to, because Mitt Romney's been different every time he's run for office. He has never been the same candidate. I mean, I don't even think he's the same candidate that he was in 2008. In 1994, when he ran for Senate, he was a liberal alternative to Ted Kennedy, essentially. In 2002, when he ran for governor of Massachusetts, he was a left-leaning moderate. In 2008, when he ran for president, he was pretty conservative-sounding, and now he's somewhere in the middle of moderate conservative, because he thinks that's how you win elections. So no one knows what Mitt Romney we're talking about each day. So I think that's one of the major problems voters have with him.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to hear from all of our listeners. 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. It's the Liberty Sons. We'd love to have you join in on the conversation. You know, you're talking about Mitt Romney and not knowing who you're talking to, and you mentioned that he got a lot of the establishment behind him, and you got to wonder what kind of deals he's made, you know, the lobbyists and all those people to get him to where he is. Rick Santorum doesn't have that baggage on him. Like, you know, he's running strictly as himself, as a true conservative with principled values, and he's going to go in there with a clean slate, not having to worry about taking care of people. And you're seeing Barack Obama do exactly that. He's trying to take care of people. You can't tell me that a pipeline that would help our energy in this country should not be going through, when even Democrats are saying they want it through. But he's taking care of the people that the part on the left that wanted that green energy and all those other wasteful spendings. So, you know, Romney's going to have that problem too if he gets in office, of taking care of the people that got him, you know, to where he is now. And so, you know, who are you dealing with Mitt Romney? You just don't know.
Yeah, and that's the main reason I think the base has had trouble accepting him as the inevitable nominee, as the media is calling him. And, if you look at this race, they've been calling him the inevitable nominee since the 2008 race was over. Mitt Romney was supposed to have this thing in the bag, and that just hasn't happened. And I think that's one of Mitt Romney's main weaknesses. I remember after the Iowa caucuses, it was really funny. Some of my friends on Facebook are very, very big Mitt Romney supporters. And if anybody else remembers that stressful night, oh my gosh, 2 o'clock in the morning for us on the East Coast waiting for results. I think it was actually 2:30 when the results finally came in. Just sitting there waiting for these results to come in, but Mitt Romney won by, 8 votes, I think, in the initial count. And they came out on the stage and declared Mitt Romney the winner by 8 votes. And I saw Facebook blow up with all these pro-Mitt Romney statuses. You know, Mitt Romney just won Iowa. He's on to New Hampshire where he'll win. And by then, momentum will be unstoppable, and he'll win South Carolina, and he'll be the nominee. by the end of January. And a couple weeks later, Mitt Romney, they decided, didn't win Iowa. He won New Hampshire, and he lost embarrassingly in South Carolina. And I asked some of my friends, I said, you know, what happened to this inevitability? What happened to the coronation ceremony after the South Carolina primary? And, you know, they didn't really have a response. And they just said, well, you know, Mitt Romney is going to be the nominee no matter how we look at this, and it's just time that everybody gets behind him. And at that point, even now, that's an absurd thing to say. Mitt Romney doesn't even have half the delegates that he needs to become the nominee. But all of a sudden, everybody's saying, hey, he's going to be the nominee. Let's line up behind him. Let's do this. And, you know, if he is the nominee, I'll vote for him. I'll go out there and I'll campaign for him if he is the nominee. But right now, saying that he is going to be the nominee is a pretty big jump, a pretty big leap to say that. And it's just simply not something that the facts back up. If you look at the actual delegates that have been awarded, he doesn't have as many delegates as the media projects that he does. So I think this is when everybody needs to take a step back. Rick Santorum supporters, Mitt Romney supporters, Newt Gingrich supporters, Ron Paul supporters. You just need to take a step back and look at this objectively and say, you know what? The chance that Rick Santorum is going to be the nominee is narrower than it was on January 6th or January 3rd when he won Iowa but didn't really win it. His chance is narrower now, and that's true. His chance is narrower than it was on the evening of February 7th when he won the three states. But his chance is not, I mean, we're not saying that he doesn't have a chance at all. The thing is, we need to look at this objectively and say that, you know, at this point, Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney are the only two candidates that can get enough delegates to win the nomination. And that out of those two, neither one of them are inevitable. And I think that's the main thing we need to look at. That Mitt Romney, though he is leading in the delegate count, is not inevitable just yet. Now, in a month, he may be inevitable. And at that point, I think we stand back and say, let's do what's best for the party. But until he has 1144, I'm not going to accept that he is the nominee of the Republican Party, because he is not the kind of candidate we need to put up against Barack Obama.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you talked about the inevitability and that factor, what the media is doing to try to force that down our throats and trying to discourage Santorum supporters. It's obvious that they want to discourage us because this thing's not close to being over. Rick Santorum has continued to win states and continue to gather delegates. And, you know, with the base that is growing, they see this thing, it's not slowing down, it's actually growing. And that scares the establishment. That scares Mitt Romney. And that's why it's almost like you see them push harder when they're more threatened. And if you watch the media, I'll give you Fox News. I mean, they're the establishment, and they are pushing for Romney to be inevitable. And they keep saying that. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at the count, like you said, objectively, you'll find that that's not the case at all, that this thing is still wide open. Now, yeah, you could say Mitt Romney has a better chance with, you know, the delegates and states coming up. But to say he's inevitable is absolutely absurd. It's like a game that's at halftime, he's got a three-point lead. I mean, you know, it's you just cannot say that it's inevitable for Mitt Romney to be the nominee, and that's what they're trying to do. And what they're trying to do is a strategy to discourage Santorum supporters and for people just to say, oh, well, I guess it's inevitable, so I'll vote for him, and then we'll rally the party together. Now, I don't think – I understand the argument that this party needs to come together, but I assure you, conservatives will rally behind Mitt Romney if he's the one. We will not stand for Barack Obama getting a second term. I promise you that. So that's not the problem. And that's when we got to look at it objectively and understand what the media is trying to do and not let them do that, not let them discourage us, to keep on the ground. And all of us that are on the ground in this campaign, we are seeing firsthand of what this campaign is capable of, and the fact that it's continuing to grow, and the passion is continuing to grow as well.
Yeah, and the media has tried to connect this campaign really to the Democratic primary last time, when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton stayed in this until May or June. The interesting thing about that, though, is that let's look at who the candidates line up with. Hillary Clinton was supposed to be the nominee. That was the general consensus at the start of the primary. That was the general consensus after the first couple of primaries. Hillary Clinton was supposed to be the nominee. So to me, she's more of the Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is more of a Hillary Clinton in this race. And as far as I'm going to take this comparison is the primary, not in on any issues or anything like that. But Rick Santorum is the Barack Obama of this race. And please don't kill me for saying that. Don't jump on me for saying that. I'm just saying that that Rick Santorum in this primary is playing the underdog candidate who can still come out on top and win this thing. And at this point, I'm pretty sure that Hillary Clinton was still in the lead in the delegate count up to this point. And there wasn't really any tide turning just yet for Barack Obama. So I think to say that this is over is to completely ignore history and to just completely ignore the voice of the people and the voice of Republicans across the country. If this was over, 49% of people in Louisiana would not have voted for Rick Santorum. If this was over, he would not have won Missouri overwhelmingly. You know, if this was over, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. The fact is, it's not over, and no matter what the media says, no matter what Mitt Romney's campaign says, this race is not over, especially when you have Mitt Romney advisors getting on news programs and in their arrogance saying, you know, well, Mitt Romney's going to be the nominee, and when he is the nominee, he can just reset like an Etch-a-Sketch. When you have people making comments like that that really reveal who Mitt Romney is and what he is, I think then you see that this race is far from over. This is not a done deal.
You're exactly right. It's far from over, and the media is trying to do their best. But fortunately, the lesson has been learned from McCain. And the moderate that we chose, because we thought if we moved over just a little bit to the left, that would appeal more to independent voters, and we could take the nomination. And that did not happen. And a lot of conservatives that bought into that, okay, we'll take it to win, that bought into that strategy with McCain and watched it not pay off, have learned their lesson, and that's why we're seeing Rick Santorum with 49% in Louisiana this late in the game. You know, and you know, the media was trying to downplay that. They tried to downplay it before it happened because they knew Rick Santorum was going to win Louisiana. And, you know, they downplayed it, and before, and I remember them going off the air before the official results were in, just because they already knew. And I can assure you, if that was Mitt Romney, that would not have happened. So, like I said, you know, it's not over. Me and Alan agree on that. I think most of you would. So stay away from the media and their discouraging comments as they try their best to implement that strategy to discourage voters for Rick Santorum. If you're new to this show, I think we have some new listeners, Alan. I was reading the chat. We'd love to get involved with the listener, you, the listener. And the number is 718-305-7176. Call in. We'd love to chat with you. You can throw up a topic, and we'll discuss it with you and let our listeners hear, almost like a little round table. We'd love to get involved with the listeners. So, you know, call in. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Now, Alan, I know, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. You can...
Okay, yeah. And, you know, I know you wanted to talk about, I'm sure everyone has been watching the news, and you see the issue that's now on the Supreme Court's front desk, and, you know, the health care, the mandates, and Obamacare. It's here, and the Supreme Court, the big argument will go on, I believe, that happens tomorrow. And, Alan, I know you wanted to get into this topic.
Yeah, they're really going to start making the case tomorrow. That's when both sides, I don't know which side is presenting first, but that's when the real argument starts. Today, the argument, I don't know how many people listen to it, but being a complete political nerd, I listened to, I think, about half of the oral arguments today after they happened, after the Supreme Court released them. And basically, the issue today was whether or not the Supreme Court has jurisdiction just yet. They brought up the Anti-Injunction Act, which basically says that the Supreme Court shouldn't rule on a tax until after the tax has gone into effect. Well, so the argument today was, is this a tax or is it not a tax? Today, the argument was that it, from one side, was that it wasn't a tax and they could rule on it. The other argument was that it was a tax and they couldn't rule on it. Well, the Supreme Court has basically agreed that they can rule on it, and they're going to continue with this these oral arguments. I mean, I really wish that I could have been in D.C. today to be in the Supreme Court. I'm sure the line was long, tremendously long, because, I mean, of course, the chamber is pretty small for a courtroom. I mean, it's a regular sized courtroom. So the line was probably long to get into the court, because you can sit in on oral arguments. It would have been great to be there today. One person that was there was Rick Santorum. He was outside the Supreme Court holding a protest, basically making a couple statements about it. And he hit Mitt Romney a couple times, as he should have, on health care, because Mitt Romney has had to be almost completely silent on the issue of Obamacare, because Mitt Romney signed the blueprint for Obamacare, which is Romneycare. So saying that, this is going back to the argument that Mitt Romney is the best candidate to beat Barack Obama. If he was the best candidate to beat Barack Obama, he'd be the best candidate to beat Barack Obama on every issue. Well, he's not, because he can't say anything to Barack Obama about health care, because he supported the same kind of plan in Massachusetts. So the fact that Mitt Romney has been pretty silent on this issue really speaks to how the election's going to go. And health care is one of the biggest issues. That's where you have the biggest chance to beat Barack Obama. That's where you have the biggest chance to really drive this message home that Barack Obama is trying to take away our freedoms. A poll came out today, 46% or 47% of Americans disapprove of Obamacare. Only 36% of Americans approve of it. 16% of Americans don't know what to think yet. Well, if you've got Barack Obama and Mitt Romney running against each other, all Barack Obama has to do is say, you know what, when they're on the debate stage, all he has to say is, you know, it's kind of funny, Mitt, that you say you want to repeal Obamacare, because you crafted the plan that we based it on. And so all those votes that disapprove of Obamacare, they're not going to know where to go. Some of them will probably stay home, and for the rest of them, it's going to cancel the issue, because if both candidates are basically virtually the same on Obamacare, that they're not going to vote based on that issue. They're going to vote based on some other issue, and they might agree with Barack Obama more on that issue. So that's one of the reasons why it is so important that we have a candidate like Rick Santorum who can speak on the issue of Obamacare. And I see we do have a caller, and we're going to get to Holly right now and say, welcome to Liberty Sons, Holly. How are you doing this evening?
Fine, thank you. Sounds like you guys are doing well.
We're doing very well. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, I'm so glad that you're discussing all that you're discussing, and I'm especially glad that you brought up the Supreme Court challenge to the constitutionality of what is known as the Affordable Care Act or the Obamacare. And I'm really, really glad that Rick had the courage and the vision and the foresight to stand there and to be there and to be a spokesman for, as you say, liberty right there, our freedom, and not Obamacare.
Absolutely. It did take a great deal of courage to get out there today and stand up for that, for his principles, and to stand up against who the media is calling the inevitable candidate now.
Yeah. And you know what's really weird, by the way? I don't know if you guys discussed this another time, but just yesterday someone said, and maybe it's like some joke, but if you type in like communism or something like that .com and socialism or something, not exactly like that, you go exactly to the White House, and then that White House, the Obama website says, do you accept Obamacare? I mean, the other side doesn't. Anyway, I'll share it with you sometime, but it's maybe some crazy fluke, but you would think that the White House would stop it right away, you know? And so it goes right from, like, did you hear, do you see that?
I think I heard something. I think I saw, like, an article headline or something. I didn't actually read the article, but I am slightly familiar with what
you're
talking
about. Well, I actually tested it out on my computer with both the, it's not communism.com, it's something like communisms.com or something, and the other one, socialism, it actually did it. I mean, I put it in my little head bar, and not head bar, but what do you call that, the bar?
Right, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't think of the word.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
But, someone's, like, out there listening going, yeah, they just, you know, they're saying it, but, yes, I didn't win that contest, darn you. But who knows that name? But anyway, the bar, anyway, up there. And it went right from there directly to, the you know, supporting Obamacare. So it's like Obamacare is basically like horrendous communism. And I don't mean to be going, you know, sensationalism, but it's like all this stuff, like they have to know they're forced to, like, anybody sent you a PayPal, it has to be recorded. I mean, all these little horrendous little things you would not even guess. It's not just affordable health care they're talking about.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I guess
it's
the thing,
balance of our freedom.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
right, and I guess the man...
Our,
go ahead.
So, sorry. I keep running. We
I
had
know,
a problem with Blog Talk. We'll talk over each other sometimes. No, it's, you know, it, like you just said, you know, it's a challenge of our freedoms and, you know, it, with these mandates and what are they going to be able to force down us next if this is to go through?
Well, next, I mean, this Obamacare is pretty much all-encompassing. I think they just forced down everything in this one little thing. I mean, yeah, oh gosh, the next one is the Hillary Clinton is wanting to sign the small arms treaty, so-called the UN. So, yeah, the American Center for Law and Justice, if you're up for it, I can I read one paragraph from the American Center for Law and Justice here?
Certainly.
Okay, just one paragraph. It says here, essentially, the question before the court today was whether it could even decide the case now or would wait to be forced to wait until all the provisions of the law went into effect, okay? So that was what the hearing was today. And then, of course, they're going to be hearing more tomorrow on more of the case. But this is what Jay says here on the American Center for Law and Justice, ACLJ.org site. It says, based on today's oral arguments, the court appeared to wrestle with three possible conclusions. One, the Anti-Injunction Act did not apply because Obamacare is not a tax, and thus, yes, it could hear the case. That's what it appeared. Two, the AIA, Anti-Injunction Act, okay, applied, but it is not jurisdictional. In other words, also just as Alito suggested, it can be waived, which would allow the court to hear the case. Or three, the Anti-Injunction Act, AIA, applies and the jurisdictional preventing the court from determining the case at the present time. So it one of those three conclusions, and maybe that didn't make sense to the, you guys who are listening, but people can actually read that on the American Center for Law and Justice site to get an understanding of this better.
Right, yeah, and that was the big argument today, and tomorrow the case moves on to the actual constitutionality of the law itself, and especially the individual mandate. And there are several outcomes that I was reading today that can come out of this case as a whole. They can uphold the law. They can strike down a single part of the law, more than likely the individual mandate. They can strike down the whole law, or they could basically decide that it's better to be decided in legislative branch, and they could basically punt the ball, if you will, and not decide either way. I doubt that will happen. The most likely outcomes experts say that the most likely outcomes right now are that the law will either be upheld or that the individual mandate will be struck down. It is very unlikely that the entire bill will be struck down, or the entire law will be struck down, rather. It's more likely that if they do strike down a part, it will be the individual mandate. And then another likely outcome is that the law is upheld completely.
I see. So if the individual mandate, which forces Catholic institutions or places like Priests for Life to the individual mandate is that, what is the individual mandate? Is that for like someone will be fined if they don't pay for it?
If you don't have health care, it's in violation. You're forced to have health care coverage, basically, and you'll get fined if you don't.
Which means they could take away your property if you have it, if you can't pay the fine
right.
The whole business. Right.
Right.
Okay, so that would be the individual mandate. Yeah, on the surface, I personally, on an emotional level, I just want to say, yeah, you know, throughout the whole thing's rotten because also the guy who signed it is, I mean, the whole thing was rotten, okay?
Right.
And the whole thing is bad, okay? The whole thing is tainted and bad, and who knows what else is in there. But I guess if the individual mandate, like you said, which is, I guess, the best we could hope for at this point, then who knows, maybe there'll be other challenges as time goes on. But, yeah, all the offices, the government, I mean, even here, the Department of Human Services, man, they're gearing up. I mean, they're getting money for this already, and they're all, you know, set to like, it's the machinery is going for it, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people are kind of cashing in already on it, I guess. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that Barack Obama and his administration are basically counting on the fact that this law is going to be upheld. The good news is, however, that even if the Supreme Court upholds the law, it's not the end of the battle. If Republicans can maintain control of the House and gain control of the Senate and have a Republican president, then the wheels will be in motion to repeal it completely in a legislative manner. Just because the Supreme Court upholds it doesn't mean that it can't be repealed by the legislative branch. Even if we just have a Republican president, it can be defunded. And, that could happen even with a Democratic president. With Barack Obama still as president, if we have control of the Senate and of the House, we have more control than we would if we just had a Republican president. And they could defund in their budgets, which would keep it from going into effect and keep the penalties from going into effect. And we could wait until we do have a Republican president to completely repeal it. I think the sooner the better. It's one of those things. It's like the Department of Education. If we would have really stuck to it, we could have repealed the Department of Education. But by now, it's a very politically unpopular thing to do nationally. The Republican base loves it, but popular support for repealing the Department of Education and doing away with it, it just isn't there. And so if we would have done it in the 80s, if we would have decided, hey, this is the time, we have to do it now, we could have repealed it. But, that's the same thing with Obamacare. If we wait around too long, it's going to be too late and people are going to be so used to it that they're not going to remember what happened and how it was passed and how many of their freedoms it took away. They're just going to see the benefits of it.
Right. Which is what people, what they're advertising, what people are seeing. I mean, and people don't look at these things in depth. It's like, oh yeah, well, sure. Anybody, it sounds good. Okay. Affordable health care. Everybody can go and it's no problem. But, then the stuff doesn't start coming out. People just don't realize. Certain people, and it's hard to realize, and again, it's a choice because, I'm Republican by the grace of God and all that, but my mom, who's like this mega Republican, very independent and all that, she advised me one time, to go on the Medi-Cal, like the state assistance or something, okay? Well, especially also when I was going to have a child, okay, and it was a crisis pregnancy and going through the... what do you call it, the oh, the crisis pregnancy center, and, you know, just all that. So here I am alone. And so I'm grateful for the, my mom said, well, now I'm paying my taxes for someone I know rather than someone I don't know, okay? So some people could argue that, like my aunt who's like mega, you know, Obama fan, Democrat, whatever, you know. Like, oh, you know, this mess. But in within reason, and I just so accepted my mom's guidance on that, and, you know, I could have had a home birth or something, and, you know, a lot of people do, but, okay, I'm a little bit cowardly to do with home births, and, you know, I'm trying to be practical, so, you know. And long story, long history. But anyway, so, but that was my choice, you see, and that was my liberty. And so what I don't... What if troubles me, even though someone says, you know, no socialism at all, because one sense, okay, if my mom says it was her taxes, but it wasn't specifically her taxes, okay? But, yeah, okay, because I was also looking into adoption, and maybe the couple, definitely the couple would have paid, but my mom wanted to keep her grandchild. So, you know, there's some argument of, you know, I will write a book about it one day. But anyway, so, but my thing is, as we just discussed, this is the problem, I guess, being forced to, or someone being forced on it, and... Like, when I was in my 20s, I don't know how old you guys are, but, yeah, I didn't have insurance. I didn't want insurance. I didn't need insurance. And I had liberty to, like, you know, just to be free. And I wasn't being fined. No penalty was on me. No one was after me. And I can see with this individual mandate, if I can't afford or if I don't want health insurance, I'm going against the law. And I think it's something like, I don't know, like the IRS or something can come in and you might come and get you. And I don't think they're known for being nice when they're collecting money. And so people who have, like, property, yeah. So people who have, like, property, you know, they're going to put, like, a tax on your property, and who knows what they'll do, you know, especially when some of those guys are, like, hard-hearted and they have all these power control and, you know, who knows. So go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. You can keep going. Just enjoying listening to that. The IRS is not known for being nice. That might be my new favorite quote.
Yeah. Well, the IRS are not. Well, they aren't, are they? I mean,
no,
maybe they are sometimes, but they have a bad reputation for that.
Yeah.
Not being. They have a bad reputation for kind of bullying and putting people who don't deserve to be bullied. In some cases, I mean, I don't know myself, but I've heard. Well, actually, I know of somebody. I don't know myself, but I know someone who's. Like, he had a separation with his wife, and they have a daycare, and anyway, somehow he's, like, working all the time, and he only gets, like, $50 of his whole paycheck, even though he works, like, 60 hours a week, because the IRS is taking the rest of it for a sin or error that his wife made or something from 10 years before. I don't know. It doesn't seem very merciful to me, but I don't know the details, but yeah, so those type of things that people don't, that the result, you know, the effect that we think, oh, yeah, I just go to the doctor, you know, and then they're going to have like, oh, and I heard something else today, that doctors are only allowed to make so much money. In other words, it's also controlling the individual freedom of the doctors. It's like they're having the control of the doctor's bank account. And so the doctors aren't going to want to be doctors. And I mean, it just sounds so much like what I've heard of Castro, Cuba, and maybe even the Soviet Union past, but it's just like, so the doctors can't make what determined by who, you know, what is this, you know? I mean, speaking of freedom also and liberty, because it's not that doctors are necessarily greedy, but yeah, you know, if the doctors are happy, you're happy. It's like if mom is happy, not happy, no one's happy. So you want a happy doctor. I mean, not like happy with drugs, but like happy, not happy, but, you know, has liberty and freedom and has time to think and has a steady hand and is creative and is not just some cocktail who's, you know, just doing his little social service, you know. That's my
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
What you touched on. Yeah. Go ahead, JV.
I was just gonna say, you know, to that point when you're talking about what made the Soviet Union collapse, you know, their command economy, and you know that the drive to excel. You're talking about the doctors. You know, I've seen reports that they're not going to work as much. So you're gonna have, you know, some of the best doctors in the world doing part-time work. You're going to see them, like you said, you're going to see people not wanting to be go into that field. And it's a very extreme, I mean, it's a tough field to go into. I think anyone would agree with that. You talk about a school that you have to put in, but the reward is so good that people will go into it. And the fact of the matter is that if this law is upheld, you can say goodbye to limited government.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And some of these people who go into it are you know, as much as they're going for the reward, they are healers. They are humanitarians. They want to help, and they have, like, I have a friend who's a optometrist. Well, he's also a lover of nature. But what he does is he does his optometry stuff. But then he takes groups of optometry students to places like Mexico and all different places and spends 3 weeks, you know, serving the poor, helping them get their, you know, so they can see better. And on the side, you know, yeah, they go cave exploring. So here's this really creative person who, you know, sure, he makes some money, but then he's able to do these things like community service or charity, you know. And I could say Christian charity, but he's not necessarily Christian. It's just that, you know, that's what that liberty gives him. He's a mountain climber. He's a outdoorsman. He's a cave, you know, really serious cave explorer. But he uses his liberty, which also includes his economic liberty, and his and all that he worked for, because he worked hard, yes, for, you know, so he could combine those things anyway.
Yeah, and you've touched a little bit on the issue of freedom here, and that's what's at stake. And that's why I'm so glad Rick Santorum is not just focusing on the things that are at face value. He's not just focusing on the economy. He's not just focusing on the unemployment rate. He's not just focusing on these individual issues. He's not running an issues campaign. He's running an ideological campaign that says freedom is at stake in this election. And he's right about that. Freedom is at stake in this election. And in his last primary victory speech or whatever, you know, the big banner behind him said freedom. And I think that goes to the core of what this is all about. This is about freedom. This is not about just who has the best plan to bring back the economy. And by the way, a lot of experts agree that it's Rick Santorum, not Mitt Romney. This isn't just about who has the best plan to keep America safe. This isn't just about these little individual issues. This is about a broader issue of freedom. That's what's exciting
right.
This election, because we have a president right now who doesn't respect freedom, who doesn't value freedom, who has no understanding of liberty and of the sacrifices that have been made to keep our freedoms and to keep our rights. And he doesn't have any respect for that.
He likes freedom to get away with you know, that saying, get away with murder, you know.
Exactly.
That's another issue. I'm sorry, I just threw that in. But I'm not accusing him of being a murderer. I'm just saying that, you know, some people like their freedom to be, do bad things, you know.
Right, exactly.
But that does not lead to freedom. That is not conducive to freedom. And just while I'm here, you know, sorry, but the, you know, and also one thing is that with Rick, it's not just about contraception. It's just not, you know, women's health and Planned Parenthood. That's also about freedom, because the truth is, yeah, guess what? Before 2008, whatever, yeah. Or, you know, he agreed, okay, Planned Parenthood makes sense, you know, women's health and all that. But when Live Action in 2009 came out with their undercover investigation shedding light on who Planned Parenthood exactly is and what they do and how they see women's health, which is to try to get little girls and everyone to just do abortions primarily, then that one, the call went forth is no federal funding of Planned Parenthood. But before that, no one really knew. I mean, unless you worked there, unless you, you know, had some inside thing. But the general people, including probably Rick, including probably Romney, including Newt, including Ron Paul, I mean, I don't think anybody really got it until these young people, you know, Lila Rose and her team, you know, went out and did this undercover work and shed the light on this. And so that's what... I talked to this young girl who's a very sweet family at the library. I just happened to bump into her, and she says, and I mentioned to her about Rick Santorum. She goes, "Oh, Rick Santorum, the one who's not for birth control."
Yeah.
And she was very innocent, and so I was able to help her in a very short time to understand. No. You know,
right.
For himself, for his family. Okay, he's traditional Catholic, you know, okay, you know, God's grace, you know, natural family, and you know, he likes children, and children are good, and a blessing, and all this. But you know, as far as that, I personally think he's not, you know, hey, if someone wants to go to a doctor or do whatever, that's their liberty. But again, that's where we go into this Obamacare stuff, where it's like, no, people who, you know, for their conscience, they can't, like a priest for life, for example, you know, hey, they don't want to put their money in support and have to do this insurance where there's, like, people doing abortions. And plus, by the way, as you probably already know this, what the definition of birth control by, you know, perhaps Obamacare, but at least many people in Planned Parenthood, is birth control is also abortion. I mean, you know, chemical
right.
abortion to them, for all we know, is like birth control. So one man's idea of birth control is not the same as another man or woman's idea of birth control, you know.
Exactly.
So that could be a tricky word. But anyway, so that's where people on the surface, you know, oh, yeah, well, you know, birth, well, that sounds extreme that someone's not for birth control. But that's not who Rick is. You know, I mean, sure, personally, his life, you know, that's his liberty, but, you know, all that. So anyway, that's my little spiel.
Right.
Right.
Right. And we do have another caller on the line right
yeah,
now, Holly,
you.
And we appreciate you for
right.
calling. We really appreciate you calling in. Always
oh,
great
thank
to hear
you,
from
you.
Okay. A lot of insight.
And great to, okay. Okay. See you next time. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Take
thank
care.
You.
Thanks for your service work. Okay.
Right.
Bye.
Bye. Yes. And we do have another caller on the line. I believe JB has already spoken with him and screened that caller. Before we get to that, I do want to mention real quick that you have about 5 minutes to vote in the best of the blog poll. Go to libertysons.wordpress.com, and on the menu bar, there's a place that says Best of the Blog. Go ahead and vote for your favorite post so far on the blog. We haven't mentioned this yet, but we have been on air for 2 months now. We've been on air and online for 2 months, and they haven't fired us yet, so we're feeling pretty confident about about our show. So I will go ahead and turn it over to our caller. Alex in Ohio, welcome to Liberty Sons. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well.
I'm great.
All right, that's good to hear.
Yeah, always great to
yeah.
hear from you. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, tonight, actually, I put it on the Liberty Sons Facebook page. There was a video a friend of mine sent me. It's a video that says, will the real Mitt Romney please stand up? And it actually is. It's actually quite a funny. It's a quite a funny video because it's true. I mean, after Santorum took Louisiana, I was very pleased at that. The events, in my opinion, were overshadowed by the just by you know just everything. I mean, he's doing something that I was very impressed with. In fact, last time I talked to you guys was just before the Ohio primary, which, in my opinion, was technically a win for Santorum because they projected him originally to lose by 3 points. Then they projected him to win by one. And then he only lost by, like, what was that, like, point something or not, like one
yeah, it wasn't,
point.
Yeah, it wasn't even a full percent, I don't think.
And so, I mean, in my opinion, that's a win because he was able to convince a key swing state that he should consider me in the option, and I love it. I mean, you guys in your own right are doing a great job because, I mean, young conservatives need to get our voices out because, really, we're the future. We're America's future. I mean, we've had the Founding Fathers as our past. We had our parents as our past. And now it's our job to correct the wrongs of the past and build a solid future so when we eventually, if we get married and have kids, you know, our kids could say, you know, Dad, I can't believe that you, not say, you know, Dad, I can't believe we used to have a freedom of religion. Oh, yeah, that was, you know, back until the Obama administration started cutting everything out. But, yeah, someday we may have that back. You know, I want to be where I tell my kids that this is the America that was founded way back in our textbooks in 1776, and it's held today in 2076.
Absolutely. You know, that's such a good point. You're talking about young conservatives and getting involved. Just like you said, you know, with this health care issue that's going through, we are talking about changing the face of this great nation. Changing the face. Now, a lot of people just are watching the news and they see this, you know, this report come up and you know, the Supreme Court's going over it and they're like, you know, flipping through channels and not paying attention, especially people our age, sadly.
Yeah.
But it's people our age that are going to have to deal with this. It's people our age who are going to be talking to our children. And just like you said, I can't believe, you know, that your son or your daughter saying to you, Dad, I can't believe that you had all that. What about my generation? And it's our responsibility to stand up and fight and let us be heard because we're going to have to deal with it. We're going to have to deal with the consequences. And, you know, the whole and the direction that we are going in right now, it's something that we will have to face unless we can somehow get back on the right track and stand up for the principles that our founding fathers made apparent.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I know I was just, I was just scanning over the news today, and it's, I mean, I couldn't really get the full details, but did the Supreme Court say that, I think I remember the, I can't remember exactly how they worded it, but it was like, we're not going to look over this until they start making people pay? Was that the final verdict today, or?
No, that was questionable. That was something they could have done. That would have been punting back to the the legislative branch. That did not happen, and by all accounts that I can see, is these Supreme Court justices want to have their say. And not to mention, if you are a Supreme Court justice, and you got to understand, you have many law students that look up to you. You have all these people. You have one of the biggest decisions that you could possibly make. And if you don't make the decision, it makes your branch of government look powerless. So they had, really no choice but to go after this. And it does look like they will have a decision when this is said and done. Now, the big debate really starts tomorrow, and we're going to start getting into the Commerce Clause, and that'll be the issue. And, the problem with this is if they can tell us, if they can tell a citizen that he has to do something, where does it stop? Or, if he doesn't do it, then he'll be fined or penalties. And they can, that's a wide range of things that they can do. And people need to understand that. And, that's one of the biggest things we're trying to do is inform young Americans and inform people in general to start paying attention to this stuff, because the government's been trying to go behind our back, going back door, and get this stuff kind of implemented. So I do think that the justices are going to make a decision. Alan pointed out the two likely scenarios. In either case, I believe it will be a 5-4 decision. Alan, would you agree on that?
Yeah, I think looking at the court right now, it's going to be a close one. I'd love to say that it's going to be a 9-0 decision to strike an individual mandate, but I mean, just looking at the makeup of the court, that doesn't seem very likely unless the states can make an impressive case for it, which I don't think is very likely at this point. But I think a 5-4 decision is probably gonna be what we end up with, and it's gonna be a nail biter to see who swings which way. And right now, the justices that could swing, it looks like, are Scalia and Roberts. Those are the two main justices we're looking at, and those are Republican appointed justices. But and this is something, I don't think this is constitutional. Most experts agree that it's not constitutional, unless you ask a Barack Obama expert, and they're going to say that it's constitutional. But, the job of the Supreme Court is not to uphold the policy of their president. It's not to uphold a certain ideology. It's to uphold the Constitution. So I think as long as they do their job, as long as they really look at this and analyze this, they're going to see that Congress does not have the authority to do this. And I hope that it'll swing our way. The individual mandate will be struck down.
If we get that done now, I mean, that would be a huge victory for our cause, because it's like, what was it? I can't remember if they said it was like 72% of America, or if that was the last one I saw, was 72% of America doesn't want this and says it's unconstitutional. Well, why is the president, and why at that time Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Reid saying, you don't know what's best for you, we know what's best for you, so we're going to cram this bill down your throat, and if you don't like it, then cry us a river. I mean, we don't care, because we're doing what's best for everybody.
The latest poll that came out, you did mention that poll. The latest poll that came out was 47% disapprove of this, 36% approve, 16% of Americans have no opinion.
I love the no opinions.
Isn't it funny, though, Alex, you had Nancy Pelosi saying, you need to pass it first, and then then you get to find out what's in it. In other words, just like you said, we know better than you do. And then it's funny to me that you have Barack Obama in his State of the Union address not even bring it up. I mean, they know. I mean, he's been trying to stay away from it. Unfortunately, the rabbit's out of the hat now as it has gone to the Supreme Court. But, I mean, in the bottom of their heart, they know what they're doing, and they know it is not constitutional. So, I really encourage. One of my blog posts was The Power of Prayer, and it's about Santorum and really supporting him and getting behind him and really seeking God's guidance during these times. And I would say the same thing about our government now and getting behind praying, that God would see this constitutional mandate that they're trying to make, that they're trying to make. I would really ask for people to pray on this, and hopefully we get a 5-4 decision in our favor, and we save the face of America. Just like I said before, this could very well change the face of America.
Well, you know, and I think one of the key things to remember here is I've heard a lot of conservatives getting worried about what the Supreme Court is going to do. The key thing to remember here is that no matter what the Supreme Court does, if we elect a majority in the Senate, we have the power to defund Obamacare and to keep it from going into effect. And if we have a Republican Senate, a Republican House, and a Republican President, we have the power to completely repeal it. And I don't see any Republicans crossing party lines to maintain Obamacare at this point. It's just too politically unpopular. And it's just not something that would happen. So I think while it is important that what the Supreme Court says, that's important. It's going to influence the election. If this is struck down as unconstitutional, we have a president who made a mad grasp for power, who overstepped his constitutional reach, and that's going to be a huge issue in the election. If it's held up as constitutional, then he has a little bit of validation. But either way, we can still get rid of it. Hope doesn't end when they announce their decision. So I just want to make that clear to our listeners and to conservatives across the country. I've heard some people getting worried about what's going to happen here and how we're going to be able to take this if the Supreme Court does uphold it. But if we can gain a majority in the Senate, we have the power to effectively end it. So all hope is not lost, depending if the Supreme Court upholds it.
It'll still be very, you know, it's tough. You know, you really don't want to get to that point with, you know,
right.
With America on the line. That's how big it is, people. It's huge. So with that on the line, you know, that's why I stress the urgency. You hear my voice. But like Alan has just mentioned, you know, it will not be over with this decision alone. Like I said, you know, it's better to be safe than sorry. And we've already seen it go through. So, you know, just a couple more breaks and this thing's in for good. So I wanted to stress that. That's where my urgency comes from.
Yeah, and I tell people all the time, I said, you know what, during the Obamacare debate, you had the Reagan Blue Dog Democrats who were pretty much, oh, I'm not going to vote for Obamacare, but then Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid both dragged them into the Oval Office and a lot of arm bending and, in my opinion, you know, bribing and blackmailing of those senators and representatives that you had to vote for this or else we will destroy your reelection campaign and pick somebody else to replace you. They said, fine, I have to for the sake of my job. And now if you have a Republican-controlled Senate, which I'm telling people all the time, you know, the presidency, yes, that's very important to get control of, but the Senate is more important than the presidency because if Mitt Romney gets the nominee, which the projections show he may, but Santorum's going to give him a fight for his life, I'm just saying, if Romney gets the nominee, then just stand right behind him. Say, we're going to support this guy for president. Yes, we may not agree with him on everything, but we're going to support him because we need to get Obama out of office. And at the same time, say, okay, how are we going to make sure that our senator, who is going against the incumbent Democrat, how are we going to make sure he beats the Democrat and get control of the Senate? And so if you focus on those sides of it, then you'll have the Senate control, you'll have the House control, you'll have the presidency control. And those Blue Dog Democrats who were mortified when they were basically threatened by the Pelosi-Reid-Obama team, now suddenly are like, wait a minute, well, now I never liked this from the start, but I was forced to vote on this beyond my will. Now they're going to turn against the Democrat Party, and we're probably going to have more votes in our favor for repealing it if we get to the position where we have the ability to repeal. And it'll be great for us because then those Dems who really truly believe in a nanny state socialized healthcare system, fine, you're on the other side of the aisle, you're voting against the repeal. But those two realize that I made a bad choice in 2009, I believe, 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
I made a bad decision then. I regret it to this day. I regret my this for my position, and I'm really angry at myself. My voters are really angry at me. I'm going to show them the true colors that I am, that I'm not a coward who, you know, sides with the majority of that time, you know, my party. I'm not going to be the coward that forcibly sides with my party and goes against my morals. I'm going to say, to heck with you, Nancy Pelosi, to heck with you, maybe at that time, Minority Leader Reid, to heck with you. I'm going to leave you guys. I'm going to go and support what my gut tells me I should be supporting, not what you're forcing me to support.
Yeah, and it's interesting, in September, I went to a Constitution Day rally, and it's kind of funny to me to think about it now. Rick Santorum was the keynote speaker at this Constitution Day rally, and there were maybe 25 people there. That's just an interesting tale and how his support has grown. You know, now all of his events have hundreds of people. But that's beside the point, just a little interesting side story. But anyway, he was the keynote speaker, and he got up and was talking about, you know, the Constitution being under attack by our administration and by Congress. And he said the biggest thing that we need to realize is when Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid were doing this arm bending, they basically promised these people that while it may not be politically popular now, and while, you know, yes, you may lose your seat for a couple of years, if we can keep this bill, if we can keep this law, if it's upheld by the Supreme Court, if it's not repealed, you're going to be back in 10 years. You're going to be back in 6 or 8 years. You're going to be back in your office because the people are going to be so dependent on this, on Obamacare and on this universal health care and all this kind of stuff, that they're going to want you back because the Republicans are going to be threatening to take it away. Once you take this step to socialism, once you take this step to this total nanny state, you don't go back.
No.
And Margaret Thatcher made that point. You know, she couldn't accomplish the conservative goals that she wanted to accomplish, like Ronald Reagan accomplished in America, because of the socialized medicine in Great Britain. If they wouldn't have had that, people wouldn't have been as dependent on the government. She could have gotten more done. Once you take this step to socialism, once Obamacare goes into effect and is not repealed, it's extremely hard to go back from there because the people are so dependent on it. And at that point, you're going to have the Blanche Lincolns and the Arlen Specters coming back. And that's when you're in real trouble.
Yeah, it's sad because I know I was doing a little bit of research on Thatcher just like right when the Meryl Streep movie came out, just doing some background search on Thatcher. I mean, she wanted a flat tax in Britain, and it was the best thing for their people, but they all rioted in the streets and were, you know, protesting it because they were so used to the system they had that when she opposed the current system and put something in that she thought was better for Britain, and in reality it was better for Britain, they turned against her. And that's why, I mean, if Obamacare does stay, then we're going to be in deep trouble. I mean, I live near, my hometown is near Cleveland, Ohio. We have the Cleveland Clinic, which is one of the best hospitals in the nation and even the world. My father was in the hospital there, and some sheik from, I think, the United Arab Emirates, ran out an entire floor of the Cleveland Clinic so he could have his procedures done and his people got their procedures done, and spent all this money on health care in the United States because it was better than his home country, which had poor standards, poor quality, and even some European leaders went to the Cleveland Clinic because socialized medicine in Europe, it does not cut the bill. And if you start socializing everything here in the United States, those stories, people coming down from Canada getting our health care because in Canada they needed cancer treatment. They're like, oh, well, you're 56. You're too old for this. We'll give you a few pills for the pain and that'll be it. And just deal with what you have. I mean, we're not going to have that anymore. We're going to have people fleeing the United States for our health care, going to places like, you know, Australia and New Zealand to get health care there because we're not good enough. And once you start going down this road, there's no turning back. I mean, I don't want that to be the day where, you know, a large chunk of my paycheck goes to health care, something that I don't need because my employer already gives me good health care as is. I don't want to be paying for something that I'm not getting. And I see my kids say, well, Dad, I broke my leg, but they won't give me a cast or won't let me get an x-ray because it costs too much for the system. I don't want to ever hear my children, my future children, ever say that statement to me. It's if you're hurt or you're sick, I'm taking you to the hospital or taking you to the ER so you can get taken care of, so you can get, you know, healed and you can get better. And that's it. I'm not allowing this part of my language, but as Rick Santorum put it, BS, you know, with all, I don't want this. And that's why I've been telling people down here at school and telling my friends back at home is you got to start paying attention because, you know, it's like, you know, in the dark of the night, evil will find you. I mean, Anastasia there, but, you know, in the dark of the night, they sneak in, they take something from you, And then you wake up in the morning and it's something small at first, maybe like a penny or maybe a few dollars out of your paycheck. But then pretty soon it's going to be, wait, you made the sign of a cross in public. That's not allowed. You're going to jail for 6 months. Or you're being sued, you know, $500,000 because you said God in public. And it goes down to stuff like that. And then pretty soon, everything the Constitution says as a God-given right by us through the Declaration of Independence into the Constitution is no longer relevant. Oh, the Bill of Rights? What Bill of Rights? We're creating a new Bill of Rights, which is you have the right to health care, you have the right to say whatever you want unless the government doesn't allow it. And we'll have 1984 and Brave New World here.
That scenario reminds me a lot of Animal Farm, which is one of my favorite books. I love that book, and I encourage anybody to read it. The government's they're going to set up everything's fair, and then they're going to start, saying, well, some people are more equal than others, and then you don't have certain rights. They're going to start rewriting history, basically. With this encroachment of socialism in our country.
You know, Rick Santorum, he said it the best in that debate. He talked about God-given rights, and these are not government-given rights. You know, it's just like Alex pointed out, these government-given rights, they'll say, here's your right. You have health care, you have this, you have that. But guess what? They also have the right to take them away from you. Okay, and that's what people really need to understand. These are, like you said, not God. We have God-given rights, and they're trying to change them to government-given rights, to where they can dictate how we vote, how we do things, because they can take things away from us.
Yeah, when the government gives you the rights, they have the power to take them away. And we have about 13 minutes left in the show. Thank you so much for calling in, Alex.
Oh, you're welcome, guys.
From you. Great insight.
Good to hear you guys too.
Great conservative voice. Thank you so much for
thank
doing
you,
what
Alex.
You've been doing.
All right, thank you guys.
All right, we look forward to hearing from you next week or the week after that or whenever you want to call in again.
All right, thank you, boys.
All right, thanks so much.
All right, take care.
You too. We have about 13 minutes left in the show. We are going to get into the best of the blog. We've been talking about that. We talked about that a little bit last week. We have had a good many votes here in the last couple of days, and we certainly appreciate everybody's input. I'm trying to find out what people like the most on the blog, and it's actually a tie. Just check the results. The two favorite posts on the blog are Christianity in America with 29.4% of the vote, and Playing God with 29.4% of the vote. Christianity in America, of course, about the Christian founding of our country and our Christian heritage. Playing God, of course, about abortion in second place, well, I guess technically third place since there's a tie for first. Santorum Defies the Odds, which is has always been a crowd favorite, about Rick Santorum and his ability to really surprise people and do what people said couldn't be done. And then Surprise Endorsement and President Obama is Right for Once, rounding up the bottom of the favorite posts on the blog. We appreciate you for voting. Thank you so much for taking part in that. It's pretty even there between Christianity in America and Playing God. I'll let everybody know, I voted for Christianity in America. Just a tremendous article that JB wrote. Just really well written and well documented, well researched about our Christian heritage. That's the people have spoken.
Well, I'm really glad that people are taking the time to take a look at those blogs, and that specific blog you're talking about, Christianity in America. It was funny because I woke up at about 2 a.m. and I just got this urge to write, I was getting frustrated with everything that was going on, and you're hearing people talk about separation of church and state, and I went and did a little digging, and a lot of these textbooks that are ancient, we're talking about the 1800s, and that have been forgotten, and I really dug down into that, and I know a lot of our blogs, they're very well informed and very informative. So I encourage anyone to go take a look and read them. And we'd appreciate it too. We'd love to see feedback on those as we are aspiring young politicians, and we'd love to hear your feed. We'd love to hear your feedback. So if you haven't voted yet, it's still up, isn't it, Alan? Can you still vote?
The poll is still up. You can still vote in that. Go to libertysons.wordpress.com to take part in that. And I just want to point out my favorite part of Christianity in America is the very end. George Washington points out that the two foundations for political prosperity in America were religion and morality, and that no one could be a patriot if they ever tried to separate politics from its two foundations. Washington, in his farewell address, says, "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would the man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars." In short, and that's the end of the quote, and then JB goes on to write, "In short, I found that what we are taught today is a far cry from what our founding fathers taught us. But what would they know, right?" And I think that's a good point. You know, so many times today people go along with what the founders say when it's convenient. They go along with what the founders believe when it's convenient. When it's not convenient, they either distort it or they ignore it and say, "Hey, that's a different time. It doesn't matter. They weren't talking about the modern era. They wrote that 200 years ago. They wrote that 300 years ago. They don't know anything about today." But when it's convenient, we go along with them. And I think that makes a great point, you know, that if we're going to go along with them, we go along with them all the time. And it's crystal clear to me that America has a very Christian heritage, and that we need to stay true to that if we want to maintain our status as the world's leading superpower, the world's only superpower.
Absolutely. You know, I made a point earlier on in this process, a Newt Gingrich supporter, when I was telling him the reasons why I chose Rick Santorum. And, you know, one of our founding fathers, John Jay, was a Supreme Court justice. And he said that it was not only an honor that we got to select Christian leaders, but it was a responsibility. And, you know, we go back and look at what our founders did and how they set up this country. And, you know, they put us on the right trail. And today we seem to be straying away from that that righteous path, that path that has gotten us to be a supreme power. And we did that through God, and we need to get back to that. And that's really my point in that article, you know, is really trying to get people to understand what's going on and to understand where we came from.
Yeah, and the other favorite post on the blog, of course, was Playing God, which is about abortion. I'm just going to read a quick excerpt from that as well, just to go over the two fan favorites. "It has been said that each time a great tragedy occurs in our country, a new bloodstain appears on our flag. If that's the case, our flag is dripping with the red blood of innocent babies who have been slaughtered in the name of women's rights." And then goes on to say, "When did it become our responsibility to decide who was good enough and who isn't? When did it become our job to decide who lived and who died? When did we become the ones with the authority to decide when the timing is right? When did we decide it was okay to play God?" And the article concludes with several quotes from abortion, pro-abortion leaders, pro-choice leaders, saying Naomi Wolf, who is a big feminist, says, "The death of the fetus is a real death." Peter Singer, who Rick Santorum mentions in a speech about abortion, who is this supposedly great philosopher who is a big advocate for abortion, says, "There is no doubt that from the first moments of its existence, an embryo conceived from human sperm and eggs is a human being. So with that reasoning, abortion is nothing less than murder." And it's just amazing that people can consciously support murder in those cases. Just I don't understand how you can do that, and, you know, say that it's a real life, and then the next breath say that it's not valuable, because I believe that all life is valuable. So those are the two fan favorites. We do appreciate you for taking part in the Best of the Blog. You can continue to vote in that poll. We'll keep it up for a little while. See if we get any new results out of that. But Christianity America and Playing God with pretty sizable leads in that poll.
Well, and, so we got, looking forward ahead, we got the primaries coming up. Wisconsin's next, I believe. Is that correct, Alan?
Yep. Yes, Wisconsin, Maryland, and D.C. And Rick Santorum is not on the ballot in D.C. Mitt Romney is expected to do very well in Maryland. From what I understand, Mitt Romney is hammering Rick Santorum on the air in Maryland, which to me is a waste of money because Maryland is very friendly territory to a candidate like Mitt Romney.
Well, you know, he never is sparing about going out of his way to flaunt his money and use it against Santorum. I think we've become accustomed to that. So, but, you know, like we've talked about all this episode and all the ones previous, we're on the ground, and I know a lot of you are too, and you're seeing this movement and this passion, this drive continues to surge. And that's important that we stay on message and stay on our narrative to win this nomination. It's, like we said, it's been a long haul. It's been a roller coaster this far, and no point in getting off now. We have a chance to win this, and I feel confident in all of you out there working for Rick Santorum and giving up your time and making your effort count. So, you know, stay encouraged. Stay away from this media narrative that's trying to discourage Rick Santorum supporters and voters out there. And it's going to be up to us to counter them, and that's going to be our job over the next coming months.
Definitely. We have about 4 minutes left in the show tonight. We appreciate you for listening in. You can always find us on the internet at libertysons.wordpress.com. That's our blog. You can find us on Twitter. LibertySonsUSA is our Twitter handle. Type that in the search bar or just visit twitter.com/libertysonsusa. I'll get this right eventually. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/libertysons. And you can email us at libertysons12@gmail.com. Always great to hear from you. Fan feedback is always appreciated and is encouraged. We love to hear from you, and it helps us plan what we're going to talk about in the next couple of shows and what we're going to write about on the blog. And, of course, you can always follow me on Twitter at J.A. Lawless. You can follow me there. And J.B., of course, is on Twitter at Texas Achilles. Great person to follow on Twitter there. And I think that's about all the announcements we have. Let's see. I think that's all we have to say before we end the show. Anything you'd like to say to close out the show, JB?
No, just stay on message and keep working hard. I know all of you out there are doing that, and it's encouraging to have other Santorum supporters out there working as hard. And we look forward to taking this nomination and going on to the White House.
Absolutely. It's going to be a wild ride. It has been already. Anybody who's been keeping track of this from the very beginning has seen that it's been a roller coaster, and it doesn't look like it's slowing down anytime soon. The media disagrees with me, but the polls and the people say otherwise. So the media can say what they want, but they don't have any more say than anybody else. So, like JB said, just stay on message, keep up the fight. We can win this thing. We can. Thank you for tuning in. And with that, we're going to close the show. We'll see you back next week, and we'll have a lot more to talk about then. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Plant the seed in our home, and boys, let it grow where all can see. Feed it with our devotion, boys, call it the Liberty Tree. It's a tall old tree and a strong old tree. And we are the sons, yes, we are the sons, the sons.